The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to Strange Familiars, Allison. Other than your various ailments, which you gave me a list of before we started, how are you feeling?
Super.
If you remove all the ailments.
If I remove all the ailments, I'm feeling great. Super.
Are you dry from Alpatwitch Day yet?
No. I feel like there's stuff in between my toes that will never dry now.
Alpatwitch Day was a rain out, to put it mildly.
But that does not mean that, A, we did not show up, and that does not mean that, B, people did not show up.
No, people did show up. And we had some lovely conversations, and
we are going to give a prize next year to the person
who comes the furthest.
So this year, I think it was a toss-up between either Zeb, who came from North Carolina, or the really nice lady with her son who came from Massachusetts.
Yes.
I think they were the furthest. Farthest, they came the longest way.
Yes, Massachusetts, North Carolina, people from all over Pennsylvania, you know, and not everybody tells us where they're from, so who knows?
There could have been Alaskans there.
There could have been.
Who were like, wow, it's so warm today.
But it's such a great thing to meet people, meet listeners, meet people I've communicated with either via Patreon or, you know, maybe emails or Facebook or whatever. Though the weather was miserable, the day was the opposite. It was quite amazing.
I kept waiting for those tropical breezes to come off of the mighty Susquehanna River, but instead it was just
frigid
cold rain and fog.
We did find out that our pop-up tent is a keep-the-sun-off-you pop-up tent, not really a keep-the-pouring-rain-off-of-you pop-up
tent. I think it actually did pretty well considering what it's real intent is.
Yes, and Chad saved the day with an extra tarp for us.
Yeah. He's the kind of person that does carry the small WD-40 to make sure your larger can of WD-40.
To make sure you can get the lid off the big can. There was an exchange I had, you know, a couple of days before Alpatwitch Day where you said, you know, do we need to get an extra chair? And I said, no, I'll just ask Chad to bring one. And I wrote a message. I said, Chad, do you have an extra camp chair? And I literally stopped myself in the message and said, who am I talking to? Of course you have an extra camp chair.
Are you willing to bring an extra camp chair? Should really be the question.
And he did.
He did. And then when our tent leaked,
he got a tarp for us. Chad's literally always prepared. Like, I've never had a time where Chad wasn't prepared in that sense. So thank you, Chad.
He probably has extra undies in there for us if we need them. Things really go wrong.
Soraya came down from New York. Chris Ernst came down, or came up, I suppose, from Maryland. Tyler Strand of Hellier and the Unbinding fame. He came from Western PA. And we all got together afterwards around our kitchen table and had a talk. And I think it was a really, really good and interesting conversation. And that's going to be the show tonight, followed by a second part for patrons. We get into caving and goblins, of course, because you can't have a Hellier talk without goblins.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of approaching the paranormal as an initiation. Of course, I squeeze Bigfoot in the conversation because, you know, I have to. It's in my contract. And just the general ideas of the author. I think it's a really, really interesting conversation. I was happy when we had it, as we were having it. As I was listening back today and editing it, I was like, wow, this is a really, really neat conversation. So that's coming up in just a little bit. Before we get to that, we have new t-shirts, three designs, a black dog design on white, which honestly, that's one of my favorite illustrations I've done in the past years. That's one of the ones I did from my bed after the MS attack. I just love the way it came out. Sage, our printer at Forest Passage Printing, somehow he got it to look almost like my original illustration on the t-shirt print. If you're looking for silkscreen work, t-shirts or, you know, hoodies or anything like that, Sage at Forest Passage Printing, check him out. He does work for us.
Work for a million other bands. If you go on Instagram, you can see the other stuff he's done, and he's done really cool specialty stuff that you're... You know, I'm always impressed with what he does.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's not a band, I know. Like the designs are always amazing.
Detail he gets with my drawings and stuff when I send it to him.
Yeah, it's really good quality. Yeah,
I'm always stunned. Forest Passage Printing, I'll put the link to that in the show notes. He's a good guy if you're looking for silkscreen work. But we have the Black Dog t-shirt on white. We have my Mothman drawing, red on black, the one I did for Department of Truth. We did a one-color Strange Familiars version. And The Eyes of Night, which was previously available at that other t-shirt service we used to use that wasn't silkscreen t-shirts. I'm not even going to say their name.
Mm-hmm.
Their designs started cracking and peeling and stuff, and they never lasted as long as silkscreen prints do. The Eyes of Night, it's an owl and a Luna moth. It's another one of my favorite designs I've done for Strange Familiars. That's white on black. I think it looks very striking. I think that's the most popular one. People just keep buying that one. There's also new tote bags. We have two new tote bags, one with the Mothman design, one with the Eyes of Night design. And we did a small run of white hoodies with the Strange Familiars Awoken Tree on the front, on the chest, and the Black Dog design on the back. They kind of sold out immediately. I only wanted to do like 10 just as an experiment, and I was just going to do the Black Dog on the back and then Sage at Forest Passage. He made one up with the tree on the chest. He's like, isn't this better? And I was like, oh, yeah, it is better. So I said, you know, just make 10, like one or two in each size. And I'll see how they do, because I've never done a white hoodie before. And they sold out, you know, within a day or, you know, pretty much immediately. So we decided, let's do a pre-order. We'll do another run of those so everybody has a chance to get one. There's a pre-order up now. You have until Sunday. So if you want one of these and you want to make sure you get your size, make sure to pre-order it. Part of the reason we're doing a second run also is because I wanted one and they sold out before I could pull into the size. So
we have to get up to a minimum because you want to get one for yourself.
No. Pre-order runs until Sunday. If you want one of these, you want to guarantee to get one in your size, definitely want to pre-order it. I'll probably get a few more made beyond what's pre-ordered, so there will be some on Etsy, but if you want to make sure you get one in your size, the best way is to pre-order it. Pre-orders close Sunday. Instead of sending everybody to the Etsy shop, I've done something new. Strangefamiliars.com/merch.
Has links.
It's like a one-shop stop, although there's pictures of the merch there. It'll take you to the Etsy shop, but it'll save you from going through and looking for all these individual things on Etsy. Go to strangefamiliars.com/merch. Look for what you want. You click on it. It'll take you there. The sweatshirt is there. It'll take you to the pre-order. The tote bags are there. It'll take you right to the page to purchase them. Same thing with the new t-shirts. Strangefamiliars.com/merch. All right. Let's go ahead and get to this conversation. It's Soraya from Where Did the Road Go? It's Chris Ernst, who often appears on Where Did the Road Go? But Chris is a filmmaker. He did the sort of film about Soraya and Where Did the Road Go? Called Magicians Long to See, which we will review for our patrons at some point for one of our review shows that we do. Tyler Strand was there from Hellier, from The Unbinding, and from Tyler doing awesome art and sculptures. You were there, Alice, at least for part of the conversation.
I got sleepy.
You tapped out after a bit. And of course, I was there. Here we go. Welcome to the square table.
The square table.
The rectangle table. It's not a round
then
table.
Where did the strange familiars go?
Straight to hell.
Strange did the road.
Go.
Strange did the road go? Strange was the road that did go.
Hi, Tim.
Hello, Sarai. How are you doing?
All right. I got Chris here.
Hey.
And we also have...
Welcome to Strand Familiars.
Strand Familiars, nice.
Tyler Strand.
I dragged Tyler Strand kicking and screaming from Albatwitch Day.
You didn't want to leave the mud.
It was very enticing mud.
To the table.
I'm used to crawling around in mud.
So we are here. I've been bugging you to come on the podcast for a while. And I figured since you're in the area, maybe we can just do it now.
Plus, you told him he can't leave unless he does it.
And held at gunpoint.
So you're setting a new bar for all future guests of Strange Familiars because you provided me with this awesome pumpkin hard cider. And I don't think any other guest has ever done that.
So. It's good, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. So, future guests of Strange Familiars, I'm sorry, there's a new bar.
Many of us are enjoying various pumpkin-related drinks.
Yes. Fresh from Albatwitch Day, which was a muddy mess, but fun still.
I was there for the last hour.
Yeah. Cold, wet day, but still good.
I was glad I wasn't there for the torrential downpour that hit about... 30 minutes before I got there.
Yeah, it got a couple times throughout the day. I'm glad we had a tent, but that tent was not enough. That is a tent to protect you from the sun, not from the rain.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well.
So, for those who don't know, Tyler was involved in the Hellier Project and the Unbinding. How did you meet those folks, the Hellier folks?
You know, it's kind of a weird, funny, long story. With my involvement in all this kind of high strangeness, I've been interested in it since I was in my teen years. And I was always kind of on the outskirts of it. I grew up in a really isolated town. And I was really disconnected even from the pop culture aspects of this stuff. So I didn't have the upbringing most people did in this. And I didn't really have a whole lot of value in the pop culture aspects. So when it came to knowing other people in the field, that was really alien to me. Like, even events were alien to me, that there were things like paracons and stuff like that.
Like alien in the sense that you didn't even know they were...
Yeah, I didn't know they existed. I didn't know they existed. It was really strange. And there was a year before I went away to college to study special makeup and effects that I had been considering... what I want to do with my life. I've always been in these weird topics, these strange pursuits, but, you know, the paranormal isn't a job necessarily, so making monsters instead of hunting them was the next viable option for me. But that was a pivotal year when, thankfully for my mother, she wanted to go to a Paracon event. I didn't know these things existed. She asked me if I wanted to tag along, and I almost said no, because I didn't want to hear a bunch of celebrities gloat about their fake ghost stories. But I ended up going, and I actually had a really great time, and it kind of reopened my mind to realizing I couldn't ignore these things, which I had been doing a lot up to that point, because I myself had stepped away, because I felt like I was getting a little too untethered at times in my youth. So I kind of married myself to the idea of taking whatever it is that I learned in my special makeup and effects schooling and trying to put that towards paranormal pursuits. So through these events, you know, I slowly started hearing names pop up, and it wasn't until having some face-to-face conversations with the colleagues I have now that those relationships built and grew from there. So it was all kind of unexpected and organic. I had no plans to be doing what it is I do now, let alone sitting at this table. And yet here we are. And I'm honored to be here. So unexpected as well. I should clarify, I did not know Tim was going to do this podcast episode.
Yeah,
so.
I dropped it on you. Surprise. Surprise. You mentioned being into this stuff when you were younger.
I was.
In what sense? Like, what form did that take?
Yeah, did you have experiences?
I did, actually. And it was kind of, even that had a stranger startup. So when I was in my youth, I became interested in occult topics and all that entails. You know, it hooks you, I think, in the various ways as it does. Even if just, you know, visually, you see these old artworks and you want to understand what they mean. You know, they're full of these symbols and they seem like dreamscapes, but you don't really understand them, but you want to. You want to know what that place is, what it means. That is what made me start digging into aspects of alchemical teachings. Mm. And as I was studying these alchemical teachings, reading up on the history of where these teachings originated in different ancient cultures, there's kind of weirder threads that exist underneath that. You know, like there's you know, these things kind of sprang up in ancient China, ancient Egypt, India around the same times. And there's strange stories about things that come from the sky or these entities that would visit people or impart knowledge or, you know, whether it be through divine experience or what have you. And I'm not saying that from the angle of like, oh, ancient aliens.
Right.
I'm not saying that at all, but there's a thread of strangeness there, and I didn't...
And it's consistent.
And it's consistent, and it didn't strike me as an alien thing, which is, well, I'm grateful to have a weirder foot that started me off on it, where like I started realizing, oh, this UFO thing maybe isn't what people necessarily think it is. Maybe it is more like there's something spiritual about it. There's something alchemical about it. And due to my mother's interests in this, she was really the only one I could turn to ramble about some of these wild thoughts I had. And what I thought was really impactful and interesting is I would tell her some of these ideas when we would be having bonfires outside at night. And it wasn't until around that same time when I had these thoughts in my head that, okay, like UFOs, these things, they visit people. This has something to do with initiations. It was a clear summer night around this period of time, and around 11:30, 12 a.m. at night, my dog at the time wanted to go out and go for a walk. And I don't think my mom wanted to walk alone, so she asked me to go, you know, if I wanted to come with. So I said, yeah. And we lived on a dead-end road out in a forested area in northern Michigan. So we took our dog out. Sky was crystal clear. And while we were walking back down our dead-end road to go back to our house, a giant luminous football-shaped object glowing like an ember bobbed across the sky in a fish-like fashion. It swam through the air the way that one would wave their arm through the air out a car window. It swam organically as if it was something living was the feeling that I got from it. So given the proximity of like what I had been reading, what was on my mind, it was clear in that moment that this thing seemed to be connected to those thoughts and that it was connected to this kind of path that I just started out on, and that's, you know, it's only built from there. So
it's like the universe reacted to you.
It seems that way, you know, and I know there's a lot of argument people can make where it's like, well, you know, these things originate in the mind or what have you, and that's all fine and well, you know, but it doesn't diminish the fact that they happen.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah.
And
it also says a lot about what we can do that we're not aware of. If we're projecting this stuff out there, imagine if we could do that with intent.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you 100%. So, you know, there's been various odd happenings. But at the end of the day, the reason I ever got into this was just because it's a curious thing, and I wouldn't have needed those experiences to have me be sitting here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important thing as well. I think curiosity is the gold that we seek, and it's at least what I seek. So,
did your mom see the thing too? And
yeah. Oh yeah. Sorry, I should have clarified that. But yeah, we were both witness to it. Including my dog.
How did the dog react?
You know what's funny? I don't have a clear memory because, like, you know, I wasn't looking at him, but I think his ears perked. Like, I think we all stopped in our tracks, but very close. So, like I said, it was...
Was it an Oz effect type of moment? Where everything went quiet?
You know, I can't recall that. Everything was quiet as
How
is.
How old were you?
I was around 15 to 16 is when I was digging into this. That was, like, a really pivotal... age for me. It's funny I brought that up earlier tonight.
Yeah,
actually, totally. But that was part of that.
Yeah.
That was a really pivotal age for me. So it wasn't that like growth period where you're in that liminal state of gaining new ideas and feelings and emotions and thoughts, and that's really what spiraled me out into space, so to speak. And you know, I think it's a very enchanted path, and that's very much what I feel, and very much what these pursuits have given me, I guess.
Do you remember what you were reading or what some of the stuff you were exploring at that point?
So, funny enough, specifically at that time, because I had limited books on these topics. Specifically, the one that was really impactful was a book called The Philosopher's Stone by Peter Marshall.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Interesting. You know,
do you want to talk about the thing that happened to you today?
I certainly would. So turns out the Elbat Witch Festival came with its own paranormal experiences on the way to the event. So for most of us who traveled to the event, we were all hit with a horrible downpour of rain. Terrible weather all day long.
Yeah, it was nasty.
Yep. And yet we still persisted, which I think is important in these pursuits. So... I had a 4.5-hour drive from Western Pennsylvania. I'm located right outside of Pittsburgh, just to help pass the time and brave the weather to get my head clear of the impending doom of the traffic. Mm-hmm. I called a friend who only lived an hour away from where the Elbat Witch Festival was, see what she was up to. And we were chatting for a few hours until we had a reception starting to break up. So because the reception started to break up, you know, I just hung up. We didn't call each other back because I think we both were just like, whatever, you know, later on. As I'm getting closer to the festival, a few hours later, about 10 minutes away, I get a text from her where she asks me, "Did you die?" You know, just to make sure I was safe in the rain because she knew it was quite a difficult drive. So instead of texting and driving, which I cannot do, I decided to give her a quick call. When she picked up, I answered the call with going, "Oh, I'm still driving." And her response was a shock. She goes, "What?" And I'm like, "Oh, kind of weird." It kind of like threw me for a loop because it was like weird the way she said it. I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I'm not like delayed, but, you know, there was a little bit of extra time because I stopped at a Sheetz and ate some food."
Yeah.
And then she goes, "Who is this?"
Which
was
kind of
surreal. It was so strange. I was like, "What do you mean?" I go, "It's me." I go, "Can you hear me?" And she goes, "Who is this?" And I'm like, "Can't you hear me?" I'm like, "It's me. I'm driving. I just called you." And then she's like, "I want to know who this is." And then like her voice starts to break up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, maybe she just can't hear me. You know, like maybe like I don't know why she didn't see my name come through. You know, I was confused about that." But I hung up the phone. I'm pulling into the festival, and then she's calling me back. So I answer the phone, and she goes, "Did you just call me?" I'm like, "Yeah, didn't you hear me? Like, I was talking to you. I don't think you could hear me." She goes, "Who are those kids on the line?" I'm like, "Kids?" I go, "What do you mean?" And she goes, "There were two little boys talking through your phone." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "I was talking." And she's like, "Whoa, this is freaking me out." So I'm like, "Whoa, this is freaking me out." I'm like, "You got to tell me what they said." I'm like, "What did they say?" And she goes, "I heard these two little boys, and they're talking about something being on top of a bookshelf." She goes, "They said some other nonsense stuff before they got to that, but I wasn't paying attention." She goes, "But they were talking to each other going, 'Look on top of the bookshelf. You have to crawl on top of the bookshelf. It's up there. You have to look.'" And then she goes, before the call ended, they both addressed me and they said, why did she pick up? And then the call ended. And I'm like, well, that's weird. I go, I hung up because I thought you couldn't hear me.
So did your name come up? Did you ask her?
No, nothing like that. She said other stuff came up, but she was trying to remember. I told her right everything.
No. I mean, when the call came in, did it say it was coming in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it did. I just don't. So an interesting detail about this is when she picked up that call, she had the sense that of like impending doom, that there was something wrong. And she thought something happened to me and that had my, like, she had a weird feeling that something wasn't right, and it creeped her out, like hearing these kids.
Well, yeah.
But another kind of odd detail to go along with this that I should have clarified, when I made that first phone call just during the drive to pass some time, we were talking about different, like, strange subterranean stories. Like, I don't quite remember how they got brought up, but I told her about the Van Meter visitor, which she didn't know about. That monster allegedly flew into an abandoned mine shaft, left behind these big three-toed footprints and stuff like that. And then, you know, we're talking about these different cavern-type themes, and I'm like, well, did you ever hear about the children of Woolpit?
Yeah.
You know, the green children of Woolpit. And she didn't know about this, so the last conversation we had with each other was about these two green children that came out of this cavern European England. Country, in England, I believe, and they had green-tinted skin, and they said that they were from this strange place called St. Martin's Land, and that they wandered through a cavern they got lost in, and then they, when they left or found an opening, they were in our world, seemingly.
I'm thinking of Allison has not heard this story before.
No, it's my only reference is that Land of the Lost episode where they almost made it back and they could see the real town, and the Sleestaks moved it, and then he decided not to go through the portal.
Yeah, this is very similar.
The Woolpit story, they came from a land, St. Martin's Land, which what they translated to eventually, because they didn't speak English.
Yeah, no.
The boy died shortly afterwards, never took to being here. The girl, if I remember right, she
eventually lost the green
tint. She lost the green tint, and she was able to, they taught her English, and that's where St. Martin's Land came from. But she also said it was, like, it wasn't a normal, like, night-day cycle. I'm trying to remember exactly
I might be wrong on this. Again, it's been years or so since I've read about it, but I believe she may have mentioned how it was, like, kind of like perpetual twilight.
Yes,
which is very much a fairyland type thing, which is interesting.
Hour.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And it's also curious, too, like, talking about their skin changing. And don't get me wrong, I understand there are skeptics who, like, who want to believe in the story, but they're like, well, this is probably like malnourished kids or whatever. Right. And that's all fine and good, but like for the context of this tale, like the point being is like, we left on this note talking about these weird fae type kids. And like, even though it was a boy and a girl in this sense, I find it strange how this phone call that we have after is these two kids.
It's the trickster.
It's strange. Mm-hmm. It's so strange, but like truly one of the weirdest things that's happened to me, because it's so outside the realm of, like, you misinterpreting something, because it's like, this isn't, like, necessarily a misinterpretation, like, this happened, but it's also something that shouldn't be able to happen.
Yeah.
Like, this is a phone call through my phone, and, like, with voices that weren't even detecting my own.
Right.
She had a completely different conversation with somebody that I wasn't having.
She was on a cell phone, too, not a landline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sure, it wasn't Gray Barker calling.
Another prank. Got him.
I've had people back when I was using a landline where I would like put the phone down for a minute, be no one else home, and the person on the other end would hear my name spoken, and I come back and they're like, "Who was that?" And I'd be like, "Who is what?" Some woman just said your name into the phone. Okay. Weird. I don't know, because it wasn't me. The phone was sitting right where I left it, and there's no one else here.
What's her number?
I used to get strange phone calls, too, when I would, anytime when I was a kid and stayed over somewhere. My mom would get weird phone calls. And she'd be like, I don't know, these people called for you, but I couldn't hear them. Like, they were like, it was too much static, and it was always women. She'd be like, some girl called, and, you know, but I couldn't take a message because I couldn't make out what they were saying, and I said you weren't home, and then they hung up. But I had no idea who that would have been. Like, everyone I knew who might have called, I'd be like, did you call? And they'd be like, no. Mm-hmm. And it only happened when I wasn't there.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
So phone stuff can be weird. It's like all the phone calls from the dead stuff.
Well, I think, and that's like the most fascinating thing to me, is like one of the things this girl said when I was on this call with her. She's like, well, how could they? You know, I joked. I'm like, you heard two goblins. You realize this, right? Like those are goblins, my guy. And she's like, but how could they do that? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I think they can do whatever they want. Yeah. You know, but it's like, but it does speak to that ephemeral quality where it's like, yeah, how could that be real? Like, it's not like, I don't think there were two things holding a phone, right? But it's like they're a voice inside of a digital world. I don't even know if you can call it digital. They're just out there in the ether, you know. Yeah. But they,
even if it's digital, it's still it's still like a signal. It's still an energetic signal that in some way has to do with, you know, you're either talking about like transmission of wireless frequencies or electricity. I feel like all of that stuff is just, I mean, classically, these are the things that the paranormal or the weird associate themselves with. Sound wave vibrations, different ways of transmitting things, subtle transmissions, basically.
Yeah,
subtle energies and subtle vibrations.
But it's also, like, curious, too, where there's, like, this kind of omniscience to it.
Yes.
Where it's like, how could they... You know, if there is some kind of intelligence capable of doing that, it's like, how would it know? Like, how would it know to do that? Like, what does it feel or experience from its end? And I also find the most interesting detail to me isn't even necessarily them talking about the bookshelf. Like, yes, that's all very curious and might have developments.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting how there was a kind of elimination of, like, random static by acknowledging that there was a girl who picked up. And going, why would she pick up? Like, so yeah, it's almost like giving credence to, like, oh, this is happening and you're hearing us, but it's because you picked up.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is it you? And so, like, that's strange. Like it would be one thing to just hear these kids talking about a bookshelf where it's like, well, you know, maybe random flukes happen with phones. You know, I've heard about text message type stuff where people get like fragments of somebody else's which, like, who knows how or why that happens, but it's not unheard of. I've heard of things like that, but totally different obviously for like actual audio on a call. But so, you know, one could chalk it up to be like, I don't know, maybe there were just kids on the phone someplace else and you for some reason it just picked up a different frequency. Yeah. But this weird acknowledgement that kind of goes out of left field from that conversation why did she pick up?
Why did she pick up, yeah.
And you especially know, that it didn't come right at the beginning when she picked up and said, who is this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But also if you think about the omniscience thing, if you compare our reality to like a video game or a computer code or whatever, you could be outside that code. Mm-hmm. And then you have all the possibilities, all the information there, and then you can just insert yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I think about that a lot.
Obviously, like, the other is outside of time in a sense.
Yeah, same thing. Same
and
idea.
Yeah, it just kind of looks in and it's like, well, okay, I'll put myself here and then there and then there.
Yeah. Well, I figure with the video game analogy, you can hold a cartridge in your hand.
Right.
And everything that you could possibly do in that game, that character can do in the game that you're playing, is in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
And you can't experience it that way. You have to actually go into it to experience it.
Yeah. Well, I think a really interesting aspect of that analogy, just to play off of the video game idea, is how we have this idea about what limitations reality has on it. So if you think about a very realistic video game that maybe has some real world kind of engines in it, like say a video game like Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
Things that follow gravity.
Yep.
If you crash a car, it's going to get dented. It follows, you know, so you could imagine if you were inside this thing and you didn't know that it was a game, you would assume that all the sciences we have would adhere to the sciences that we have because gravity works. All the science that made those cars works. However, it doesn't diminish the fact that if I were to put a cheat code into it, I can make a machine gun that can shoot out full vehicles in mass, and it doesn't affect reality. It doesn't affect the law.
Whole of the reality.
It doesn't affect the law of conservation of matter because it doesn't really matter. Right. It's a video game. So I think magic as well as just this reality, might be a little more permeable than we would think in that regard. So it doesn't mean that it doesn't adhere to laws. Of course it does. You know, I'm not here to say, oh, nothing matters. Of course it does. Science matters. However, I think there are things that somehow can operate outside of that. And I don't think it needs to make sense. It just does.
I mean, that's the way I've heard it described in sort of my research, particularly coming from like Eastern, specifically within like an Indian yogic tradition, is that it's like there are supervening laws that are sort of underneath or that are fundamental that we do not understand, but that these are the laws that people who are, you know, yogis, essentially magicians, that are engaging with it. And there's certain things that I've heard, like, there are seven layers of electricity in the ether, and that in the third layer is where you have to access it in order to sort of get power in order to make things happen. I mean, I don't know. This is all just stuff I've heard. But that idea, I think, of there being other laws or other, essentially, laws of nature, but they're just at a level that we're not able to access with our tools, and that those laws then from them, Our laws emerge, our laws of physics. Yeah,
that's interesting.
And so you're not doing anything that is against nature when you're engaging with, you know, these yogic or magical practices. It's just you're working at it from an oblique angle and using sort of working with these different laws.
See, I like that, and I do like to think that whatever this stuff is, including, you know, the vague terminology of what we would consider magic, like, I do believe it is all part of nature, and I think nature accounts for those gaps. Yeah. You know, it's just not something that we necessarily hold great definitions for at this point.
Well, when we talk about, like, supernatural, like, assuming that this stuff is beyond the natural world, but I like the idea that it's just rare phenomena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, getting struck by lightning is rare. This is super rare, you know, seeing a UFO or what you experienced, you know. And less rare, I think, once you've had experiences, because you're not as blind to them, or you're more noticeable to the things giving them to you. I don't know.
Yeah, there's something to that. You see that with experiencers, you know. Not saying that, you know, I have that, I hold that kind of title, but just people who experience phenomena in general, you know, in the past, when I started researching this stuff, you know, I would have had a very skeptical eye for those who had multiple, you know, experiences. But I no longer have that because I believe it is the norm and the pattern to, once you see one thing, there's a domino effect that occurs. And I think, like what you were saying, there's a lot of speculation that you can have as to why that is. Like, is it something in you that changes? Is it something in the other that takes notice, so it just pops up? Do you notice each other? You know, like, what is it? I think about it a lot like magnets, where, you know, you can go all day going, well, what came first, the chicken or the egg? But if you were to do that with two magnets colliding, what side of the magnet do you blame? It's both. You know, I feel like there's aspects of that, too. You have that give and take, but something seemingly occurs, you know, and continues to occur, that pull, that attraction, it expands upon itself.
Did your friend check the shelves in her house?
I don't know if she did yet, but, you know, I'm going at all angles. So to bring a little bit more humor back, I should say, like, when I did arrive at the Elbet Witch Festival, I was telling everyone in the circle here to be like, hey, like, I don't know if it's going to be one of our shelves. Like, just keep this in mind, because I don't know whose shelf.
And you were asking if we had any, like, shops around called something bookshelf or something. Yeah,
if you're listening to this episode, go check your shelf.
Check your shelf before you wreck your shelf.
Oh, that was good. Oh.
That was great.
So, you mentioned magic more than once there. And I have heard many people, and I don't know if internally that you guys have referred to it as this, but I've heard many people refer to Hellier as an initiation ritual. Multi-part question. Do you feel that that's the case? And if so, how did you change through that journey?
Ooh, that's a big one. I think, at least my hope with something like Hellier is that, without being so grandiose in the expectations of it, whether people want to view it as an initiation or not, I hope that people see that unlike this oversaturated pop culture idea of these things, there are people who have genuine questions, genuine curiosity, and it's healthy to explore that curiosity and to understand that the world is more mysterious than I think we've been led to believe at this point. And I think that is more than enough of an initiation. Like, if you were to ask me, I think an initiation only needs to start with asking questions. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we are all bred of this fabric that stems from curiosity. You know, curiosity is what led me to this table. You know, and if Hellier sparks curiosity in people, especially curiosity over fear, which is something that we like to talk about a lot, then I do think that it acts as an initiation. Mm-hmm. Even if it be just getting that foot in the door. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's up to you to go as far as you want to on that path. No one's here to tell you where your path should go. You know, I think that's all, that should all be dictated by the individual. We're all at different stages. We're all at, we all have different questions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to acknowledge as well. So for me, man, it's changed me in great ways. I think it's heightened my understanding greatly by being involved with a group of people and to see the dynamic of like both camaraderie and struggle of working with different people who think differently than you. You know, that's been transformative. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people like to focus on positive aspects of being the only thing that's transformative, but it also comes with hardship, you know, the hardship of being vulnerable and making something that people see, you know, there's so many things that can change you with this. And it's scary. There's a lot of fear that's involved, I think, in these pursuits, but all that is transformative. But above all, you know, to give the most positive answer, I've learned a lot faster than I would on my own because I had a group of people I could bounce ideas off of. And that even extends to everyone at this table, you know. And I think that's why we're here at this table, because we're all curious minded people, and through our individual actions of living a very strange life and making very strange decisions individually, it somehow has culminated in everyone sitting at this table at this particular point in time. And I think that is no less an act of magic than anything else.
Mm-hmm. So. Absolutely.
Yeah, well said.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The things that brought me to the point I'm at were such rare type of things. Like, when I look back and go, man, if this sequence of things hadn't hit just right, I wouldn't be here. I don't know where I'd be. And I see that numerous times in my life, and I'm just like, what the hell? Like, yeah. Do I even have free will? Did this stuff, or was this just a plan I'm following, you know?
Yeah. It feels like that. I struggle with that a lot, where it's like, you know, it's like, do we have free will or are we just puppets?
And if we are puppets, we don't know, so it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it's like, or are we our own puppets, you know, to a higher state of being, you know? So it's like, who knows? I'm just here for the ride.
I remember Tim sending me his book the first time. And Beyond the Seventh Gate... is this going to be some urban legend crap? I'm literally sitting in my dentist office, and I start reading it, and I'm like, oh no, he's dismantling the urban legends. Yeah. And digging into the folklore, and who is this guy? And then I'm like looking you back up, and then I'm like, you need to come on right away. And then, boom, eventually we're here.
Yeah.
And Chris sent me his movie Corpse, which is a modern... artful retake of King and Yellow.
King Yellow, yeah. Huh. Yep. And I had started listening to Sarai. I don't even remember. That was, I think, because I had, you know, in my interests, I had been Googling things about pyramids and ancient, you know, history or lost history. And somehow that, I think it was because your first guest was... one of your first was...
Like Robert Schock.
Robert Schock, yeah. And so then, you know, this is when I... and anybody who was my former boss there, you can write me up for it. But I used to not work a lot when I was at MTV. And instead be, you know, like researching weird paranormal stuff online. And yeah, that sort of led to... And I don't even know... Yeah, I think it was through listening to your stuff that I got to know everything else in all the other podcasts. Yeah. And then from there and going up to visit you since we became friends is where our most recent project that we did, film that is essentially the Soraya Where Did the Road Go biography of Where Did the Road Go, let's say. But that all for me felt very much like, at least... when I am engaged in doing my creative practice, I kind of try to let what I feel is like the waves of the ocean push me in a particular direction. That's why I'm not a super successful filmmaker, because I'm not going out. No, it's very much so, because I'm not going out and I'm not trying specifically to make something for this particular purpose. I mean, I've done things like that with partners before. That's what the Hell in the Hole was kind of like. But most of the time when I'm doing my own projects, I try to see where fate will lead me. And most of the time it's worked out. Like, that's how Corpse happened. That's how this film with Soraya happened. That's how other things in the past that I've done, things with music. And I think there's, you know, for me at least, there's something to that. Letting the current push you in certain ways.
Yeah.
I like that word, too. I use it a lot, the current.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I don't know if you guys feel this, but like, there's certain times where it's like you become aware that it's stronger. Than it like fluctuates at times. You can tell when it's present, at least.
Yeah, and sometimes it gets stagnant.
Yeah, and I think that's good. I think that's a good thing, too, because it's like you can't always be tapped into the wire.
Right. You
know, I don't think that ends well for anyone. But, you know, I think that ebb and flow, you know, there's a lot to be meditated on upon that.
Yeah. To put it simply, take breaks, people.
Well, yes.
Take breaks. Like, don't...
I don't know what that means.
Well, take breaks from the... Don't let... You have the metal show. You're not paranormal all the time, every minute, every day. Enough. Yeah, yeah.
Although they do kind of overlap at times.
Of course, they're going to do that. But yeah, I think it's important sometimes.
And for people like Jeff Ritzman, you know, he had to really get away from it for a time period before coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every time you mention Jeff, I feel like I just have to step back and just say, what a loss.
Yeah.
What an incredible mind, and I miss him. And I never even got to meet him in person.
Yeah, same here. Talked to him so much. And
yeah. And I talked to him probably 1/75th as much as you did, but we would have conversations a couple times, either after Where Did the Road Go appearances or otherwise, when he came on Strange Familiars once, I think.
Yeah.
And he was on Strange Familiars for 10 minutes.
Right.
But then we talked for 3 hours after
that. Yes, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was a fantastic conversation.
Yeah, my first conversation with him, including the show we recorded, was over 6 hours.
Yeah, he's... What a mind for this stuff, and what a loss.
And, I mean, it's awesome that Jeremy's putting up the old Paratopias they did, because I'm getting to hear other stuff from him that he never mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, he might have. I mean, it's been so long now that, he may have talked about it and I forgot to, but...
And I'm going to say, so this is Maryland prejudice. The first time I heard that accent that Jeff had, which was a very Maryland accent, and I'm from Maryland, so I'm allowed to say this, I was like, nope, not, no, nah, this guy can't have anything good to say. Just growing up around that accent. But no, as I listened, I'm like, this guy is fascinating, and he's got a mind like a steel trap. I mean, wow, he was on it. He was ahead of the rest of us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're all getting there.
Yeah.
He was there.
Yeah. That's what I was telling Jeremy when you were on that. Like, I'm listening to these old Paratopias from 2009, 2010, going, so you guys had all this stuff already back then. Yeah. That I discovered on my own, and we've put together now, and it's like, oh, Jeff and Jeremy had this stuff.
You mentioned that before. You mentioned the
endless cycle.
I don't think people were ready for it then. Well, I think now people are a little more open to
it. It's like, where are the footprints then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how we... Look, in my life, I've not been able to hit the crest of waves too well. I'm either way ahead or way behind. I just like... And something happened with that, and people were ready for it.
Yeah.
Because I was expecting, and Josh was expecting too, we were expecting a fight when those books came out. We're like, this is going to be a fight with the cryptozoologist people. And there were a few, and there are a few who still don't like it. But the general reception was like people were waiting for it. It's like they were ready for it. And I say, this is a book that should have been written 20 years ago, but maybe not.
No. I think it came out when it was supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think when people look back on those two books 20, 30 years from now, they're going to be at a Passport to Magonia level.
They're going to be like,
these guys had all this stuff. And
That's a high compliment. But yeah, I don't know.
The thing is, it's not, you went across all the phenomena, which is what so many people have not done.
I don't understand. How can you be, even if you're like, your main thing is Bigfoot, and you go and you talk to a witness and they're like, yeah, I have ghosts in my house. That's not interesting to you?
Right.
Ghosts
are nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, like, even if you're not going to connect those two things, which is, they're highly connected.
Yeah.
That's not interesting to you, at least? Like, you don't stop and say, well, wait. Tell me about these ghosts. You know what I mean? Like, but no, it's like, they don't, just tell me about the Bigfoot.
Well, that's the funny thing, too, because, like, I've had the inversion of that, where, like, when I was into these occult topics, I didn't have an interest in Bigfoot, not because I didn't think it was interesting.
Sure.
Like, it wasn't that I didn't believe in Bigfoot. I figured, I'm like, well, it's mystery adjacent. It's strange that, like, people can't find it.
Mm-hmm.
I go, but it probably is, like, some undiscovered animal. But even if it is, it's an animal. It doesn't pertain to these topics.
Right.
So, it was interesting enough on the surface of, like, well, it's cool that it's a mystery, but it's not, like, I'm not into, like, zoology stuff,
right.
And that's fine, like, it's cool that it's out there. I wasn't a non-believer, but it didn't interest me,
right?
Because it was like, well, if it's real, it's just an animal.
That's the way it's put forth. I mean, up until their book,
but then it's like, by default, by looking into occult stuff, and you start seeing these connections to, like, old texts and you know, the kind of high strangeness materials that come out of those reports. Like, oh, well, actually, this is the same stuff. Yeah. You know, so it's like, so then I became interested in it. And now that kind of thing is more interesting to me than most of these, like, subgenres, if you want to break them down into that. Because it's like, it does scale it down to that visceral, physical element to a degree of like, how those experiences unfold. So it's like, whoa. You know, you can go out into the forest and have the enlightenment of, mm-hmm. of what these things have to offer, so mm-hmm. to speak. You know, you don't have to be looking up to the sky or some ephemeral thing that, like, is such a rarity. It gives you the power to enter that tree line, so to speak, and grab it for yourself. And I think that's an empowering aspect of those stories. It's like, yes, it does get people into the woods, you know, whether they, so the most positive angle I have on it is whether they think it's an ape or not, it still gets people into the woods.
Ooh, and it gets them away from the electromagnetic fields and stuff that we're inundated with.
Yeah, it gives you that visceral human experience of connecting with nature, and I think that is the most important aspect of that phenomenon, and is very much needed in this day and age.
And I think if some of these cases most likely are basically wilderness poltergeists, I think it's because people are going out into the wilderness and they're getting away from all that noise and electromagnetic stuff that is normally inundating them, and they are connecting with nature, which is giving this stuff the energy to manifest. Because they're looking for it, and so rocks get thrown, and they hear vocalizations and repeats and knocks, which is the same stuff you hear in a poltergeist case in the house, but just with a different face on.
If Octavian were here, he'd be saying, in grimoire magic, they tell you to go out to the wilderness to practice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To which I will add, Jesus said, go out to the wilderness to pray.
I love that.
The many saints that I have studied coming from the Vedic tradition, there's a very specific thing about you do have to go into the wilderness, and it's especially good if you're either in a cave or on a mountaintop.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
I know a thing or two about those.
Yeah. But before we get into that, and all Bigfoot, I know people are wondering, have you guys seen the Colorado footage?
I have, and it's absurd.
Yeah. Okay, so I want everybody's opinion. It's shot ostensibly from a train.
Okay.
Let me call it up so you can see it, and then you can comment
on it. And people can Google this.
People can Google it.
Shot from a train, that's
it's,
right.
A tourist train. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Let me just call it up on YouTube. Oh, no. It's... The general consensus on the Strange Familiars Discord is that it's bunk. My initial thing was like it's very well done if it's a hoax, but it's filmed from so far away.
Yeah. And it's easy to make stuff well done nowadays.
Yeah.
You know what though? Even from far away, the funniest thing about this footage is that it has giant tree trunk legs. like there's full blown pants underneath that suit, and it's very chonky.
Yeah. If I wanted to go out for lulls, that's like where I would go in my weird Slender Man suit to try to create a viral video.
See if there's a better one to look at here. These are all from news.
All I can say is that ain't no patty.
Definitely not.
And I mean, I've posted pictures or videos that had weird stuff in them, but they're not weird, and I know what they are.
Yeah.
But then you try to tell people, no, I know what this is. This is not paranormal. They're like, no way, man, that's paranormal. And you're like, okay. But I'm telling you, I know what it was. How recent is this?
Very recent.
Very recent, yeah.
Like, I don't know, four days ago?
Oh, God, yeah. That looks awful.
Look at those ankles.
Yeah. No, that's a guy just walking along in a suit.
Look at those bell bottoms.
Yeah. Now, the question is the person filming it in on it?
Well, the commentary, which we don't have the phone
this
on.
This isn't that, where it's like sort of the sparse trees and it looks like the... Oh, no. What are we looking at here?
It's a dude with pants who's walking along and then sits down.
This is also like a weird zoomed in video too. The normal video is like far away and it's like normal speed.
Yeah, and it's very pixelated.
Yeah.
Because it's so.
So in the original video you can hear a guy say...
Oh, he does have the flares, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's got them bell bottoms.
Maybe he's a time traveler.
You hear somebody say,
an elusive creature.
Oh.
They're not
surprised.
Very surprised or anything. I don't know. This is why I'm not a video guy, and I always say this when people send me stuff because I'm like, I don't. What am I going to say? I don't know that much about stuff. Yeah. I look at stuff and go, that looks pretty good. I wasn't looking at the flared legs, mind you. I was looking at the peaked head.
Okay, yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
And you know, but I always like
you do see those flared legs.
Oh yeah, I totally see it. Yeah. I always lean to like it's a fake, right? That's sure. I'm gonna prove.
So will I.
It's gonna be a fake until you prove to me that it's not a fake. I'm kind to people because people get very excited about sure. this, and I don't want to like. Poop on anybody's birthday cake. Is that a thing? I just made a new phrase.
Something Tim does that the rest of us didn't know about.
I said I do not want to poop on anybody's birthday cake. Anyway, so I usually just like, well, you know, that looks pretty interesting. This one I thought looked more interesting than most. But yeah, the more I looked at it and the more people pointed out, especially in the Strange Familiars Discord, because sort of pointing things out, I was like, oh yeah, it's kind of... But I knew people would want us to comment on it. So, well, the consensus at the square table is no bueno yeah. on the
but
new.
But the thing is, even if it looked real, even if we were like, "Well, this might be real," so what?
Oh yeah,
we already know right. this stuff exists. So, yeah. what is this telling us that we didn't already know?
Right.
Well,
and it's never going to convince yeah. a diehard skeptic who's no. like, "This stuff doesn't exist." They'll look at the video and they'll go, "That's fake," no matter what.
Well, there's already been people who are like, "Oh, there's pixelation behind the head; it's CGI." It's like,
wouldn't it be better? I don't think it needs to be
a lot,
CGI.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a guy it's in a suit. Like, yeah. Right? Yeah, like that's a lot of.
Yeah, that's artifact compression.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, like, it's funny on that same note that you mentioned, like. One of the more empowering things to come to accept with this phenomena is that it is so rare that it probably will never or doesn't need to be on video. And there's a kind of like, I hope you can follow my mindset on this. There's an interesting romanticism to this that I've come to realize that we don't get to experience in the modern day and age except through these experiences. So I was thinking on, so at this table, we have various artists that work in various mediums. As an artist, like reflecting on paintings and things like that, what I find really fascinating about paintings in the past is how I realize in the modern day and age, none of us actually experience paintings the way they were perceived then, mm-hmm. when those are the only way you could possibly yeah. see yes. something. Imagine how impactful that is to see a colored image of something before cameras existed.
Yeah.
There, that That's is why. Something none of us have ever experienced, but like sure. we can only imagine it. There's something interesting to be said about this phenomena that it kind of operates in the same way where you have these experiences that people have. They have descriptions of it. There's poorly drawn witness sketches, but it's kind of like those medieval cats with the strangely human
yeah,
faces.
Yeah.
It kind of gives you a taste, yeah. but it's not enough to satisfy yeah, yeah. the truth of it. So it retains its purity by being a mystery.
Yeah.
And I think that is more important to these things and the mechanisms that they play than being so forthright in the way they reveal themselves Definitely. To a digital camera, which, again, only highlights the importance of the personal experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think also the fact that it's something that has... You're getting similar phenomena or the apparent artifacts from analog technology to digital technology aren't that much different. Too, which makes me think that it is technology agnostic and that there's an adaptation that doesn't matter if it's analog or digital or something else, okay. crystal-based technology.
This is interesting, since you're somebody who literally works with film, teach film.
Yeah.
I've had several people posit to me that we can't get another Patty film because everybody's using digital cameras now, but if we went back to analog film, we could get another Patty film. But
I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me because the Patty film would be... The Patty film is simply a documentation of something that's happening in front of you. You could do that digitally or you could do that with 16mm film. I mean, they're both working in the technology. One is having chemicals that are reacting with the light. The other are electronic sensors that are reacting to the light. So, I mean, maybe if we go beyond it where we have technology that can capture something that doesn't react with light... Maybe that would be different, but so far everything reacts with light. So I think that might be more important than the actual technology itself. Yeah.
So unless we want to get really woo and say somehow the other knows the difference.
But the idea, I mean, there is this idea like analog is somehow more pure than digital, and I don't necessarily
that
buy that.
Part of that, like Renaissance of vinyl.
It's
the
sort of it's fetishism.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a rationalization for.
I mean, maybe you might get slightly different effects like you might get a different type of light smear because it just works in a different way, but you're going to get fundamentally the same thing, which so far all I've seen, you know, is the same in terms of what people are producing.
Yeah. I've heard some ghost hunters say that analog recorders get better EVPs than digital ones. And that might be also because digital compresses.
That probably.
Analog has artifacts, though.
That's true. Yeah. So
interesting.
And if this stuff is as Keel posited, coming in from another light spectrum, that might also be why we don't really get good footage of them. Yeah. Well, why even good footage of them looks bad because cameras can't quite hit them.
Cue the woo, the woo soundbite. Because just for the sake of record coming from me at this point in time, part of my thoughts on that Patty footage, because I do think I do think that it's real. I do think that there's a genuine thing in that footage. But if you really want to get weird with it, I'm not saying I believe this 100%, but I speculate that that footage exists because that footage, going off of what you were saying with the way we deal with film and how we document, I believe that footage is modern scripture. And scripture doesn't need to be rewritten twice. It only needs to be written once.
Wow.
And that scripture, that scripture has led people into the forests they would have never walked had it not been written.
Sure. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a take. Wow.
I can get on board with you with that.
Do we have a mic here? Can we please drop the mic?
You could say, though, even if it was faked, it still had the same effect.
You could indeed.
Which, yeah, the other wins either way.
It
always wins.
Yes.
Welcome to the madness of these pursuits.
Exactly.
So, a thing I've taken, and this is not original, I stole it from Tobe Johnson. And we can talk about this. And he said to me one time, because we were talking about all this great audio we have. Have you heard the Sierra sounds? They're amazing.
Yeah.
Like, whatever's going on there, and I'm not even saying it's Bigfoot, but it's something. And we can't reproduce it, and it's beyond human vocal range and all this stuff. It's they're amazing. Lots and lots of great audio out there. Fantastic audio. I think I've got some pretty good audio myself. Not to brag, but... but no, we have good audio. Like, certainly, my audio might is nowhere near the Sierra sounds, but it's better than anything I've gotten on camera. We can say that, right?
Sure, sure.
Miles better than anything I've ever captured on camera. So, Tobe says, it's almost like we're not allowed to film this stuff. There, that feels like an essential truth to me. But then why? Like, that, the question is why? Does that make it more real if we can see a picture of it? Or, like...
Well, I think it goes back to, like, you know, kind of some of those thoughts I stated earlier. I think it almost... I feel like having a visual of these things backs it into a corner. Because once you have a visual in your mind, it never leaves.
Yeah.
And so it's dictated. It's permanent. There's no room for change. So, you know, there's aspects of that, but then, you know, there's also aspects where it's like by keeping it rare, by keeping it not accessible to the masses, by delivering it down to the personal experience, it makes the impact real. It's not something that's just so lighthearted that, you know, we can just consume it the way we consume everything else in all of its... cheap substance.
Yeah.
You know, does all the media that we consume every day by our own will and against our will really satisfy anyone?
Yeah.
I don't think it does. So why would something so important as this thing that's been with us since the dawn of time give us such a fast food fascination?
Certainly.
The one possible interesting exception to that is lights.
Yes.
When it's a plain light.
A plain light, yep.
But there we have this thing that's universal across the phenomena.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Like,
so lights, poltergeist activity, electricity, these are the commonalities.
So it's because...
Yeah.
Is that like the basic form of it, and we're allowed to have a...
Yeah.
Kind of, sometimes, a picture of that. Sometimes.
Well, I also feel that like light is kind of like a Rorschach test, though, in a way.
There you go.
Yeah. You know, I think that so many people, you feel a certain kind of way when you see that. It's such a universal form. It's formless, and yet it's real because it exists. So, like, you know, I feel like that importance there exists in that kind of Rorschach ability to kind of be how you perceive that light, you know? So
it's a formless form. And I think there might be something, too, in, like, Well, if we know from scientific method and research that there is this phenomenon, and I am not going into all quantum, but the double slit experiment, which is basically about indeterminacy, something being in an indeterminate state, and then observation makes it determinate. Yeah, yeah. I do think that if that is part of what we know about physics, there could be something to that, especially if this is, you know, the phenomenon is acting from...
creation?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That there's that act of perceiving. There's something about locking something into place, and that the phenomena... And I don't know why then sound would be an indeterminate thing. I don't know, I guess, what the difference between vision and hearing would be. But I do think that that's something interesting there about the indeterminacy of it and us not being able to really, like, latch on to a concrete form of the mystical. Yeah.
Well, I think it also, you know, I know we could just keep spiraling with the, you know, the what ifs of it all, but then I you know, I also think it's interesting how we have definitions for these lights, like St. Elmo's fire, things like that, and the fact that fire itself, as this, you know, this substance, more or less, is something that's also been with us since the dawn of time, and we have seemingly like a genetic hardware baked into our brains because of how we've always utilized it for survival. So there's, you know, an element of that there too, where it's like, is it playing off of that? You know, lights have always served as a fascination for people, and in more ways than one, they serve illumination. Mm-hmm. So it's like, is that part of that point? But who knows? Yeah. You know, but I think that's the great aspect of this. Like, it's such a mystery, such a mystery, and it only continues to make us seek more answers.
Coming back around to caves now.
Yes. Allison, do you want to tell us what he does?
I don't really know what Tyler does.
I don't either. So,
now, what was the word that you enjoyed saying?
Oh, how often do you get to say, are you a spelunker?
Did the caving start before the paranormal, or did it develop after?
You know, it's interesting. So that is something that did develop after. And
the caves did it to you.
And, well, here there's actually a lot of strangeness with that, because you would think it should have started before. So when I mentioned being from a small northern town where I had my first experiences, I actually come from a town with a history of mining, particularly copper mining. Which is curious. So we're one of the largest producers of copper in the world, actually. But even though I grew up with that history, it kind of has that numbing effect where when you grow up around something, you don't really think about it.
Sure,
it's in your blind spot. So I never thought about the mines. In fact, and it's not like there were any that were open. You couldn't explore them. They don't really exist anymore. Mm. That stuff, I should clarify, the mining has since gone. Mm. So the towns are kind of in that depressed state of what once was. Mm.
Just the UP in the UP.
It is the UP. Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, look at that. We have a. It's funny. I was like, maybe I'll try to not say where, but pick up on it. I actually appreciate that. But yeah, it was in the UP. Very proud of where I am from. So it wasn't something I thought about, because this is something you grew up hearing a lot.
Yeah.
But given the nature of where this research has led, and given the development of things like the Hellier case, I actually took a job at a cave completely inexperienced to learn how to cave properly to benefit that case. So it was kind of like was kind of like my undercover mission to to gain knowledge in that field. So just to hit an interesting Hellier note in terms of what people may see if they do happen to check out that documentary, there's an episode under the title called The Unknown Country. And in that episode, believe it or not, is actually the first time I ever entered a cave. When Greg and I did recon on this episode, it was actually the first time I had ever stepped foot inside of a cave that was seemingly filled with monsters. Yeah, which is why we're very inexperienced. We don't have any helmets or any protective gear. But what's interesting is by the end of season 2, in that final episode, I already have 3 years under my belt at that point. Okay. So not long after we entered that first cave, I got this job working in a cave as a cavern guide. And I worked that job for 3 to 4 years and have continued since. So I've been caving for about 5-6 years at this point, and I've gained a lot of experience in it, both with learning, you know, geology, aspects of geology, and just knowing how expansive these things are. There's truly entire worlds beneath people's feet. There are entire worlds underneath your feet, and I don't think most people understand the scope of what these places are truly like. And a lot of that is because of how pop culture paints these places. And there's also been revelations, like great revelations, with how hidden these locations are. You know, you watch a television show where someone comes across a cave and it's this large door, perfect doorway opening, right, and you just walk in. Very few caverns are like that. In my experience, they're, you could be standing 3 feet away from one and not see it. Yeah. They're little cracks in a stone that you have to squeeze your body into until it opens up into a large chamber, or it's concealed with vegetation. You got to get on your hands and knees and crawl. You know, like, these things are so well hidden, and there are so many of these places that are not discovered. It's just really given me an appreciation for all these hidden aspects of nature, and understanding that they all kind of intermesh with one another and build this kind of beautiful tapestry of how these mysteries continue to survive. So I do personally believe that the underground plays a role in these paranormal aspects. Now, that's not to say that it's the be-all, tell-all. I don't necessarily think these things are physical, so why should physical spaces matter?
Right.
But they do matter because they are symbols, you know, they're also symbols, and they intersect with our own journeys. So to have these liminal spaces that you really need to work toward to find and enter, you know, and brave, you know, the dangers of them, you know, is very impactful. It's been a great journey for me. Of all the things, it's funny, Tim, you mentioned earlier, like, how has this changed you? That element in and of itself is the thing that's changed me the most, is the people I've met and the journeys I've been on in the underground are quite literally no different than unveiling other worlds, because there are other worlds. You know, so it's you know, it's been a beautiful journey in that regard. But
and you have so many ancient cultures that speak of the underworld as a literal thing. And you have, like, Native Americans who talk about the ant people.
Yeah.
Who took them underground so they could survive the last cataclysm. And it's like, okay, that doesn't seem like something they just made up. They're telling this like it's history. So who were the ant people, you know? And where did they bring them? What else is there that we just don't even know about?
It's fascinating stuff. And that's funny, too, like, when you talk about the underworld. It's such a simple word, and we're all desensitized to it because we grew up hearing it. But you just break it down into two words. Underworld. It's the world underneath you. That's you know, so it's like, that's the basic concept of some of that. It's like, that is, there's other realms beneath your feet. And it's interesting because, you know, I know a lot of what we're talking about here at this table, you know, doesn't necessarily have to deal with the physical. And I do believe there's a large aspect to this strangeness and the underground that is largely not physical. So, like, I don't, just for clarity, I don't necessarily believe that if you enter a cavern, you're just going to find some undiscovered hidden utopia that exists inside the earth. I don't necessarily think that's true. I don't necessarily think there's a physical place you're going to find. But that doesn't mean that there aren't experiences where those who perceived that experience, it didn't seem that way to them. You know, like, I think there's altered states, and I think there's experiences like any other experience, whether it be seeing a Bigfoot or seeing a UFO or seeing a poltergeist. I think there are things that are seen that one can experience when you confront the underground that can look that way, because something's making you perceive it that way. And you know, I think there's interesting doorways that are to be opened, or at least one could seemingly try to, and that's what I'm trying to do in the underground.
Do you want to tell the story about your friend with the rock?
Oh, man. I could.
Because that's a good story.
I've been holding on to this one as a secret, but I can divulge it here.
All right. We're crowbarred out of you.
So, when I worked as a cave guide for 3 to 4 years, you know, I worked with a lot of great people there, some of which had worked at this location for over a decade. One of those people was a maintenance man. Won't say his name, but he was a maintenance man who worked in this cavern for about 12 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. He was a no-nonsense guy. He was very practical, which is why he was the perfect guy for the job to fix anything that went wrong in the cave, whether it be a burnt-out light bulb or any other kind of mechanical issue. He was kind of a jack-of-all-trades. He had never experienced anything strange, you know, like through the grapevine of me being a curious person and asking about these things. I know that as such. But I went to work one morning. Our job started at 9 o'clock. We typically arrive at 8. And around 9:30, I just got done with some opening chores. And our maintenance guy was upstairs and he was visibly shaken. And people at the front desk were like, "Did you hear what happened to so-and-so?" I'm like, "No, what happened?" Well, they tell me this story. And I went to this guy as well to get his take. And what happened while he was underground inside this cave, he was working on a passage that was titled The Devil's Staircase. The reason why this passage had that name is because it was a short tunnel, a side branch tunnel. They had a dead end, but that dead end terminated in about a 40-foot vertical chasm that back in the day, before this was a show cave, spelunkers would actually scale up with just their hands and knees to traverse to crawl into this upper passage.
Wow.
So they called it the Devil's Staircase. His particular job at this point in time was to create an electrical water pump system to illustrate how in the ancient past, water at one time formed a waterfall to create this chasm. So we would turn this switch on and water would cascade down the wall for education purposes. Not only did he have to install this water pump, but he also had to create new light fixtures inside the cave so people could see the ground that they're walking on. And the way these light fixtures were created is they were all set up, they were light bulbs, ambient light, that were projecting out of rock cairns. So a stack of rocks piled up to conceal any electrical wires and things like that to make it more...
So he's making little ritual structures.
Unbeknownst to him. But, you know, just to spruce things up so it's not so jarring to kind of not take people out of the occasion. So in order to conceal these wires and to make these light fixtures, this guy was walking up these steps that was parallel to this tunnel. At the top of these steps was an area of the cavern that had very nice dry sand, like a pile of very loose sand, no rock debris inside of it. So he was taking buckets of the sand and he was mixing it inside of the cement that he was using to conceal the wires so that it would be color matched to the cavern. While he is grabbing one of these buckets of sand on this upper level, he looks over to a rock ledge that has a previously built rock cairn. And this rock cairn has a loose, nice, solid chunk of limestone beside it that's not part of the structure. He looks at it and he realizes that it would be great to use in the new one that he's making in this other passage. He doesn't carry it down with him since he has these buckets in hand. So instead, he picks it up and places it off to a different side on a different ledge so that he can see it more visibly and grab it later. He goes back to work in his tunnel, uses up the cement and the sand, and needs to fill the bucket up again. He leaves the tunnel, walks up the steps to the sand pit. He looks over at the rock, and the rock that's on that ledge is now split into two pieces, separated by about 2.5 inches. This weirds him out, because there's seemingly no reason this solid chunk of limestone should have split that way. And he kind of gets the sense that somebody is playing a prank on him. but he also knows it doesn't make sense because he's down inside the cave alone and nobody's around, let alone the fact that if anybody were to pull a prank on him, they would have to be able to read his mind and know what he was going to do with the rock.
Right.
But he kind of brushes it off. Again, he's a no-nonsense guy. He just chalks it up to happenstance. Maybe it just split somehow. So he goes back down the steps, goes back into his tunnel. He's mixing up more cement. And while he's mixing cement, right behind him, in this darkened passage, he hears what sounds like a little boy laugh right behind his ear. So he quickly turns around, and there's nobody there.
Did the boy ask him to look on the shelf?
The little boy, unfortunately, did not. So the maintenance guy is freaked out, and he's thinking, is this a little kid that wandered down this passage, yeah, you know, from a family tour that's right outside the tunnel? Because a tour, if there was one, would be going right outside of the passage he's working down. However, this passage at this point in time is off limits and closed because he's working in it. He goes out to the mouth of the tunnel, and nobody is down there. Not only is there no family tour, but there actually wouldn't be another tour for the next 20 minutes. And he starts getting a really creepy feeling. The hairs on his arms are standing up, and he gets the sensation that somebody or something is watching him. And he doesn't normally have these feelings. But he tries to shrug it off. And to get his mind straight, he grabs his bucket and he goes to fill it up with more sand. And when he goes up to grab more, he looks over at that ledge again and looks at that rock that he placed there. And it is now split into three pieces, separated by 2 inches. So that was enough for him.
So I'm thinking, like, when you first told me this story, and it was Tyler and I have had 4-hour conversations.
It's true.
Starting at midnight several times. And I remember you telling me the story, and you first told me, and I thought, well, maybe there was like a pressure fracture or something, and he set it down. So the first crack, maybe.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Unlikely,
yeah,
but maybe.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
The
sure.
second one,
very strange. Well, and here's the thing, too. It's like, even with the pressure crack, this was a rock. There was even a guy that tested it. This particular chunk of limestone was so durable, you could hit it with a geology hammer, and the hammer would spark off the rock.
Wow.
It was very solid. And even if it was, like, say, even the first crack, even if it was, like, a pressurized thing, how would it separate, like, by 2 inches?
Yeah, that's...
You know, I had him, so, for clarity, after this happened, I went down there immediately with a backpack. I took photographs of this rock. I wrapped the individual pieces of this rock in the paper that we use in the bathrooms. And I stowed it away. I actually own this object, which is one of the most incredible things I own, even though to anyone else's eye, it's just a rock or pieces of rock. But I did have him go down and, like, explain, you know, like, what happened beat by beat and show me how much the rock was separated. Very interesting and very much in line with, you know, Tommyknocker folklore of the area, absolutely, which very much is prevalent in Pennsylvania and the mines and the caves. So for those who may not know what Tommyknockers are, you know, they're these kind of mischievous goblin type characters that inhabit the mines and caves, and they like to pull pranks on miners. Sometimes they take, you know, pieces of their food, or they hide tools. Sometimes they allegedly warn miners of impending collapse, you know, but there's certainly a trickster element, and this very much hits the hallmarks of that. And, like, this maintenance guy didn't know that stuff either, you know, but he's very much experiencing this modern folklore of this thing that's been carried here into this state for years, you know, and I think it's so fascinating. But, you know, it's not the only thing that's happening there. I'm sorry if that was a long-winded
story. Well, tell what happened a year later.
Oh, so you're right. Sorry. So, this is really interesting and very much also aligns with this kind of fairy folklore idea. So, after I took these photographs, I did a little write-up online about it in like, an Instagram post. Posted it to both my Instagram, posted to my Facebook. And, you know, I forgot about it. You know, I continued to work there over the year and the next year. So an entire year goes by. I'm off of work on this particular day. And Facebook Memories actually posts the photos of when I took pictures of this shattered rock in the cave. I'm like, oh, no kidding, that was a year ago. I was off of work that day, so I wasn't in the cave. So I took out my phone and I texted one of my friends who worked there. And all I said is I said, hey, check for strangeness in the cave today. This guy who's working calls me immediately and he's freaking out. He goes, why did you just text me that? He's like, you're freaking me out. Why would you say that? And I'm like, why are you freaking out? And he goes, I was down into the lower part of the cavern, which doesn't have lights. I was leading a cave tour, a deep cave tour. He goes, and my entire group, including myself, we all heard what sounded like little girls laughing and running through the cavern. And I'm like, that is so strange. So, like, he didn't even realize why I texted him that. And it pertains to that laughter that the maintenance guy heard. So it also makes me think about the whole fairy legends, you know, like things like fairy rings and someone's trapped inside of them.
Yeah.
You can pull out the person that's trapped inside after a year and a day, because that's when they kind of reappear, even though there's this time dilation,
you know,
it's like all that passage of time is just one moment. And I can't help but think, is that just one moment to these things that are inhabiting the caves? Like, is a year, and it could have been, I actually would have to check to see if it was a year and a day or if it was just a year. It might have actually been at, specifically a year and a day, because I don't know if I uploaded those immediately that day.
Okay.
I think I may have did, like, because like I'm one of those people, I have OCD, so like sometimes I'll have something that I'm like, I really want to post this, but I have to think about it. So I actually think it was specifically a year and a day from when I posted that, but I didn't realize that, like, when it shared the memory. But it very much pertains to that kind of distorted time cycle, you know. So that's just one tale from the underground.
From the underground.
I think I'm gonna stop now because I'm a sleepy
You're peacing out.
Oh, the,
sorry, that was so long.
No, no,
you asked.
Good night, Alice.
Good night, Alice.
Thanks for listening.
Hang out as long as you want.
It was nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you. Have a safe
Thank you. I will.
She slept through noise bands, so she's fine with us.
I don't have the schedule of my life now where I get up at like insanely early, like 5:45 or 6 o'clock, and then I go to bed at like 9:30.
So. I understand.
That's not very goth of you.
No, it's not. It's all false advertising. It's always been false advertising.
I do that now. It's because of these things, actually.
Yeah, right?
I know a little too much about them, and I think...
Did I tell you my sleep with the lights on story?
Yeah. The weird alien text? Yeah, I think about that, too. I'm like, nah. I'd rather see what's coming at me.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you have anything you're working on that you can tell us about?
Oh, God. Well, I feel bad because I don't have a great platform for people to follow just yet, but I am working on... getting a Patreon up and running just so people can see all the kind of different art that I work on, because I am an artist and a lot of that art pertains to these topics. So you can keep an eye out for that, and you can keep an eye out for updates on that if you were to follow me at BlackWolf26 on Instagram.
There you go. If people aren't familiar with, like, they might know the Hellier Goblin Head, which you sculpted, which is amazing.
Oh, yes. I'm actually super happy you brought that up. A lot of people actually don't know I made that.
Yeah.
So for those of you who may be fans of Hellier or will be fans of Hellier, when you see the creature on the poster art for that, that is actually a physical sculpture that I created. And I created that sculpture specifically with that case in mind. And even that has its own interesting kind of synchronistic story, which is what I like to bring to this kind of art field. You know, like in Hellier, there's this guy who is experiencing these kinds of creatures in the beginning that sent these emails. And his creatures very much sound like typical gray aliens. And there's even blurry photographs of these things, of course, because you always need a blurry photograph when dealing with the paranormal. but in this photo and his description, he talks about how these things are small and pale. They don't have hair, and they have thin, lipless mouths and round, bird-like eyes. He doesn't talk about a presence of ears, But in this documentary, we make some allusions to how it sort of connects and sounds similar to the Hopkinsville Goblin incident.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those creatures depicted in that incident very much have very large ears.
Yeah.
Very prominent ears. Yeah. So I kind of wanted to make an amalgamation of something that had callbacks to the Kentucky Goblins while also adhering to David's description of the thin lipless mouth and the round bird-like eyes. So I kind of took those ears, scaled them down to a more viable, anatomy, so to speak, and made something that looked like it could be real, you know, something that could exist. And I wanted to have a generalized but vague feeling about it, something that, depending on who's looking, it could appear fairy-like, or it could be a space alien mm-hmm. or a spaceman. You know, that's kind of the terms I kept in my mind when I was designing it. But I am the one who designed that particular creature and the way that it looks on that poster. And it's really interesting and honorable how many people have incorporated that image into their own artworks. So I think it's incredible to have art that inspires other artists.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I want to continue to do that. So if you guys follow me and look at what I do, you know, I'm nothing but a creative as I learn how to navigate this strange world while I don't know what I'm doing.
Part two of this conversation is going to be a patron episode, patreon.com/strangefamiliars. Or if you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, you'll get it there as well. If you want to hear it, if you want to become our patron, if you want to help us make Strange Familiars, patreon.com/strangefamiliars. Our patrons get extra episodes like the one coming up, part two of this. We do extra episodes every month, at least one. Often we do more. We try to do two. I think most months we've done two. There's different tiers of support. You can get merch at certain tiers, or you can just get the bonus episodes, etc. at Patreon. Check it out. Again, it's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. And of course, like I said, it's on Apple Podcasts as well. I think it's called Patron of the Strange there. You can subscribe. Thanks to everyone who has supported us. We could not do the show without our patrons. Thank you so much. And we'll see you over at Patreon for the next part of this conversation.
Looking for something to do after Halloween is over? Are you into the strange, bizarre, and unusual? On November 3rd, 4th, and 5th, the Strange Realities Conference is coming back to Nashville, Tennessee, and streaming online. Come join us for 3 days exploring mysteries, supernatural, the occult, weird history, and more, featuring lectures, presentations, and workshops by Tim Banal, Zach Hunt, Cheslin Vance, Bryn Collier, Tobias Whalen, Brent Rains, Joshua Kutchen, Kiki Dombrowski, Recluse, Nathan Isaac, Christopher Ernst, Aaron Goulias, David Metcalf, Timothy Renner, Mallory Sawinski, Soraya Azcap, and special guest Steve Berg as your Master of Ceremonies. Make sure to join us for the fun and informative weekend online and at SIR Nashville November 3rd and 4th and online only November 5th. Tickets are available at strangerealitiesconference.com.
Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. If you want to hear more or purchase music, you can go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com. Strange Familiars is on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars. We're on Instagram, @strangefamiliars, one word, no underscore. For Strange Familiars merch, you can go to strangefamiliars.com/merch. For everything else, strangefamiliars.com.
Not straight, the very narrow is its way. My feet, they are not twined. this long and lonely street. Step by step, the winding way through broken heart to break of day, through soaking rain and burning sun, follow the hum. No roads bind my legs, no turning gears. Hold my time, I stop at every well. Sing a song, then start again.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.